So Jesus said to the Canaanite woman, "It is not fair to take the bread from the children and throw it to the dogs." Dogs? Whoa, did Jesus really say this? Or is this a misprint in the biblical witness? Why would Jesus have such disregard for the Canaanites that he would call them dogs? And where is his mercy and compassion to reach out and heal this tormented daughter? Does he not care about the outsider, the needy, and the sick? And what might this story teach us about maturing in our own faith by following in the footsteps of Jesus? Today, I would like to talk about cultivating mercy as a habit in our life. And I will use today's gospel as my text. So let's take a closer look. So before this encounter with the Canaanite woman, Jesus has just had a run-in with the religious leaders of his day. And they have accused Jesus of being loosey-goosey with the purity codes. Like, you know, not washing your hands before you eat. And Jesus defends his actions, and then he refers to them as hypocrites and people who are blind. He then decides to leave town, head north to Canaanite territory, to the towns of Tyre and Sidon. And so these towns are located in what is now known as southern Lebanon, along the coast, just north of modern-day Israel. Now, as you may recall, the Israelites had a toxic relationship with the Canaanites since they came over on the Exodus some 1,200 years earlier. And when they had crossed the Jordan River, they killed many of the Canaanites and tried to extinguish their culture and religion. And so, needless to say, there was no great love between the Canaanites and the Jews. But at this point in the story, a Canaanite woman from around that region approaches Jesus, a rather bold act for a woman of her time. Differences in ethnicity, nationality, religion, gender, and demon possession would forbid her from entering into Jewish circles. But she's not deterred because she has this very ill daughter who needs healing. And so she goes up to Jesus and she says to him, "Have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." And instead of being moved with mercy and compassion, instead of sharing his healing gifts with this woman's daughter, he just ignores her. And he hopes she goes away. But like any mother who cares deeply for her child, she's not going to go away. And she begs him to help her. And that's when Jesus replies, "It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." And she replies immediately, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Jesus listens to her rebuttal. He begins to grow in mercy. He changes his mind, and he heals the daughter. Now, this complex interaction reveals just how human Jesus is, doesn't it? But what I find most interesting about this story is Jesus's willingness to grow in understanding and compassion by taking the time to listen to a marginalized woman, to move beyond the cultural barriers of his days, and to broaden his ministry of healing and hospitality to those beyond the house of Israel. In summary, Jesus was big enough not to be ashamed to learn something from a Gentile Canaanite woman. And he was humble enough to expand his vocation of healing to foreigners. As Maya Angelou once said, do the best you can until you know better. And then when you know better, do better. Have mercy on me, Lord. Mercy. Mercy is something that is in short supply today, isn't it? Mercy is showing compassion and forgiveness towards someone whom it is in your power to punish or to ignore. Mercy is an act of kindness that springs from a generous heart. Mercy is the capacity to respond effectively to the plight of another's person's suffering. And mercy comes from the French word merci, which means thank you. Embracing a posture of mercy, though, well, it's not that easy for most people. We have impediments. In fact, having a posture of mercy is not necessarily something that comes naturally to us because we're not biologically programmed for it. Instead, we are hardwired for fight or flight. We're hardwired to give tit for tat, and we look out for number one first and foremost. You know, we get wary of those who often screw up and do not do their part. Sometimes we get burnt out, and at other times we experience compassion fatigue, and so we turn inward. We all have impediments that keep us from being merciful. And I was thinking that maybe Jesus' response to that Canaanite woman was that he was so overwhelmed by the number of crowds that were constantly seeking his attention. There are other impediments, of course, such as a tendency to hold on to old hurts, you know, not letting go, refusing to forgive. We're afraid of those whom we consider our enemies, often justifying acts of violence. We often prefer to being right over being loving, and many of us have the inability to tolerate another person's worldview that is very different from our own. And in these cases, we are likely to shut down emotionally, take a step back, thereby withholding understanding and mercy. This is what was happening between the Canaanites and the Jews during Jesus' time. This is what is happening in parts of Africa and the Middle East between the Muslims and the Christians. This is what is happening in Europe between the Ukrainians and the Russians. And this is what's happening today in our own country between the Democrats and the Republicans. Jesus said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy." I remember the time when I received mercy from a complete stranger. It was in my 20s, and I was going to school full time, and resources were scarce. I was running out of food, so I asked my roommate if I could borrow her car and go to the grocery store and stock up. And so as I was pulling the car back from the grocery store, I heard a thump. And I looked at the rear view mirror, and I had hit the quarter panel of the car next to me. It was then I remembered my roommate hadn't paid her car insurance. My heart began to beat loudly, and I became fearful that I would have to pay a hefty bill. And so I wrote my name and phone number, and I wrote, "I hit your car," and I put it on the windshield. I went home and waited for the call. Now, like most of you, I had been brought up in a culture where everything was measured, counted, judged, and punished for those who had offended. So when the call came, I held my breath and waited for my sentence. Would he yell at me for damaging the car? Would he demand immediate payment? Would he negotiate perhaps a monthly payment plan? But to my surprise, the owner was not aware of the damage. So I explained it to him. He says, well, hold on. And he went into the garage. He looked at his car. He came back and he said, well, don't worry about it. It's not that bad. Mercy. 10 years later, I was sitting in a parking lot, in a school parking lot, when I heard a thump against my back bumper. I looked in the rearview mirror and I saw a car that had bumped into my bumper. So I got out to look at the damage, and there was a man who had just dropped his little girl off to school, and he looked harried and forlorn, shaking his head. I looked at the bumper, I smiled at the man, and I said, don't worry, it's not that bad. You see, mercy begets mercy. Mercy kicks into the universe a new trajectory that brings light into the darkness. Mercy makes the world less cold and more just. So how do we grow in mercy? Well, I could go on for another 30 minutes, but I'll spare you. So I'll give you some highlights. Cultivating the habit of mercy is a practice, and it is a desire. And it begins with a lifelong process of commitment that begins with the acknowledgement of God's mercy, in which we have received over the years grace after grace. And then it continues with our recognition of the mercy that others have given us over the years. Mercy begets mercy, thereby strengthening our own habit of mercy. There's nothing more healing than to be forgiven by others for our trespasses against them. And there is nothing more joyful than to experience the flourishing of another person's who has suffered, and that suffering has been relieved, and their life begins to flourish because of acts of mercy and compassion. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And so we continue to pray, forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespassed against us. Now, mercy can wipe away a debt, giving the offender a second chance to thrive. Mercy includes things like clemency, benevolence, pity, forbearance, acts of compassion, the giving of alms, the giving of service. It involves missions of mercy to the hungry and the poor, the prisoner, the suffering, and those who cannot afford medical care. But it goes beyond that when you truly cultivate this habit of mercy, because mercy necessitates social justice that causes us to challenge those structures and institutions and ways of life that corrupt and destroy the creatures of God. Mercy, as a habit of the heart, must expand to include the neighbor whom we do not see, but who are in distant lands, whose resources, both human and physical, are being exploited because of our own economic benefit. A great majority of the world is suffering because of our irresponsible capitalism. And while there is often little we can do to prevent the chaos and the suffering throughout our world, we still have the power to vote, to stand up, to lift our voices, to act, to reduce our own carbon footprint. We have the ability to reach out our arms of mercy and share compassion with those who are within our reach. My friends, the world today is just too dangerous and yet too beautiful for anything but mercy and love. Mercy gives hope to those who receive it, and it frees us from past mistakes. And so I want to conclude my sermon with a spirit of mercy, repeating the words of this song called "We Shall Be Free" that was made known by Garth Brooks. And it goes like this. When the last child cries for a crust of bread, when the last man dies for just words he said, when there's shelter over the poorest head, we shall be free. When the last thing we notice is the color of the skin, and the first thing we look for is the beauty within, when the skies and the oceans are clean again, we shall be free. We shall be free, we shall be free. So stand straight, walk proud, because we shall be free. And when we're free to love anyone we choose, when this world's big enough for all different views, when we all can worship from our own kind of pew, then we shall be free. And so during this time of meditation, I want you to just reflect on those words and see if it doesn't help you cultivate that habit of mercy.
Anyone?